Hello, this is Wendy Bauer. I am reading today from the Decatur Herald and Review. This is July 27th, 2015. We will continue now with the death notices for July 27th. Pauline Briney of Findlay. Pauline Briney, excuse me, Briney, 90, of Findlay, Illinois, passed away Saturday, July 25th, 2015, in Mason Point in Sullivan, Illinois. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m., Wednesday, July 29th, 2015, in Lockhart Green Funeral Home in Findlay. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday in the funeral home. Burial will be in Wright Cemetery near Findlay, and memorials can be made in Pauline's memory to Faith Covenant Church or to Clarence Bixler American Legion Post number 409. Van A. Silver, Decatur. Van A. Silver, 85, of Decatur, died on Saturday, July 25th, 2015, at Imboden Creek Living Center, Decatur. Funeral services will be at 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 29th, at Body of Christ Ministries, 2199 West Ridland Road, Macon, Illinois. Visitation will be 5 to 7 p.m. Tuesday, July 28th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, Illinois. Graveside services will be at Hammond Cemetery, Hammond, Illinois. Following the graveside services, everyone is invited to a luncheon at Hammond United Methodist Church. Memorials may be made to Body of Christ Ministries or U of I Civil Engineering Department. Anne Swigert of Stonington. Anne Swigert, 81, of Stonington, Illinois, died at 6:20 a.m. Friday, July 24th, 2015, in her home. A memorial mass will be held at 10 a.m. Monday, August 3rd, 2015, at Holy Trinity Catholic Church in Stonington. Interment will take place in Oak Hill Cemetery, Taylorville. There will be no visitation. Memorials may be made to Holy Trinity Altar and Rosary Society or the Maintenance Fund at Holy Trinity Catholic Church, P.O. Box 257, Stonington, Illinois, 62567-0257. Margaret Lucille Ulrich of Decatur. Margaret Lucille Ulrich, 93, of Decatur, passed away Thursday, July 23, 2015, in Symphony of Decatur. Graveside services to celebrate the life of Margaret Ulrich will be 2:30 p.m. Wednesday, July 29th, 2015, at Lutheran Cemetery in Decatur. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. Wednesday at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. Memorials may be directed to Trinity Lutheran Church. Catherine Ann Sariati Armin of Decatur. Catherine Ann Sariati Armin, 87, died Monday, July 20th, 2015. Mass of Christian burial will be 10 a.m. Tuesday, July 28th, 2015, at Our Lady of Lourdes Church. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. The family of Catherine Armin is being served by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Stephen L. Denton, Decatur. Stephen L. Reno Denton, 68, of Springfield, formerly of Decatur, passed away on Thursday, July 23rd, 2015, at Memorial Medical Center in Springfield. Services to celebrate Steve's life will be held at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home, 2801 North Monroe in Decatur, on Monday, July 27th, 2015, at 7 p.m. Visitation will be 5:30 to 7 p.m. on Monday, July 27th, 2015, at Moran and Goebel Funeral Home. In lieu of flowers, please consider making a memorial contribution to the Wounded War Project. Sherry M. Hoke, Pena. Sherry M. Hoke, 57, of Pena, died Friday, July 24, 2015, in Barnes Jewish Hospital, St. Louis. Services will be 10 a.m. Wednesday in McCracken Dean Funeral Home, Pena. Visitation will be 5 to 8 p.m. Tuesday. Burial will be in Linwood Cemetery, Pena. Memorials can be made to the Siteman Cancer Center, St. Louis, Missouri. Lyle D. Hoffman, Decatur. Lyle D. Hoffman, 84, of Decatur, died Thursday, July 23, 2015, at Heritage Health. Private family services will be held at a later date. Judy A. Kaiser, from Mount Zion. Judy A. Kaiser, 65, of Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away at 10:35 p.m. Friday, July 24, 2015, in St. Mary's Hospital, Decatur. A service to celebrate Judy's life will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 29, 2015, at Antioch Christian Church, Long Creek. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation on Tuesday evening from 5 to 7 p.m. at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. In lieu of flowers, the family suggests memorials to American Cancer Society. Sandra B. Kuntz. Sandra B. Kuntz, 68, passed away July 23, 2015, in Crawfordville, Florida. She was born in Decatur and had lived in this area 29 years. Services will be held at TNT Hideaway, 6527 Coastal Highway, Crawfordville, Florida, 32327, on Friday, July 31st, 2015, at 10 o'clock a.m. In lieu of flowers, donations may be made to the Crawfordville Humane Society, 9 Oak Street, Crawfordville, Florida, 32327. Nancy Ann Rood, Iliopolis. Nancy Ann Rood, 53, of rural Iliopolis, died at 11:50 p.m. Thursday, July 23rd, at home after a battle with ovarian cancer. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Monday at Illini Congregational Church, Warrensburg. No formal visitation, but friends may call on the family at the church 2 hours before the service. Burial will be in Lake Bank Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the Illini Congregational Church, Oasis Day Center, WUIS radio station. Barbara Jean Wilson, Decatur. Barbara Jean Woodrum Wilson, 81, of Decatur, died Thursday, July 23, 2015, with her family and friends by her side. Funeral service celebrating her life will be 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 29, 2015, at West Decatur Church of God, 4500 West Main in Decatur, Illinois. Visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, July 28, 2015, also at the church. Burial will be in Macon County Memorial Park. And now to more local news from Decatur, written by Ryan Voiles, a staff writer. A picture of a beautiful golden cat at the top of the article titled "Shelter Stuck with Waiting on Cat Room." A sticky situation has led to a delay for the Macon County Animal Control and Care Center's new cat room. When the area had its shared ribbon-cutting ceremony with a neighboring business June 25th, no cats were in the room. Shelter officials at the time noted that it would probably be another week or two before cats could be moved into the room due to the adhesive material used. But more than a month later, the only moving things in the 310-square-foot room are the fans aimed at drying off the walls. We're checking in on the room and saying, "Well, the wall's not dry yet. We'll check again later," said Shirley Stanley, president of the Decatur and Macon County Animal Shelter Foundation. The issue comes as the outside wall of the shelter that the room was built onto had an adhesive material finish used to make it a smoother surface. A humid and rainy summer so far have compounded the issue as the effort to dry the wall have been slower than expected. While the material would not be toxic to the cats, Stanley said it could make for an unappealing scenario. "With how much cats shed, the walls would just be covered in hair," she said. "That's not even taking into account if someone in the room leaned up against the wall and stuck to it." Fortunately for shelter officials, there is no rush for the room to be operational, as all the cats that would be housed there still reside in cages. Stanley said it's not an undesirable situation so much as one of patience. And after years of fundraising, planning, and building the room, a few extra weeks seem appropriate. "We've waited this long already, so this isn't really much compared to what we've already been through," Stanley said. Officials are optimistic that the room will begin to house cats by August, and plans are already in place for a new ribbon-cutting ceremony to commemorate the occasion. The room cost about $200,000, which was funded through private donations. Next article, Hoop House Holds Hope for DIGG, written by Valerie Wells, a staff writer. Milton Barbie has done some prison time, but now that he's a paid apprentice in the Decatur is Growing Gardeners program, he has found his niche. "I'm doing something for the community instead of being on the streets," said Barbie, whose eyes light up when he talks about his love for nurturing growing things. He was on hand at Good Samaritan Inn on Friday when the master gardeners from the University of Illinois Extension had a tough decision to make. Which hoop house, designed by Caterpillar Inc. engineers, was the best? Hoop houses are small greenhouses made on the cheap of cast-off materials, such as pallets and scrap lumber. Caterpillar employees have been regular volunteers at Good Samaritan and DIG, serving in the inn and showing up with graders and backhoes to help turn empty city lots into attractive and productive gardens. This time, manufacturing engineers grouped themselves into teams and competed to see who could design the best small greenhouse. "I think they liked the idea of rubbing it in each other's faces," said Inn Executive Director, the Reverend Stacy Brohard, chuckling. The judges did not mince words when they discussed the features of each hoop house. They all had their good points, but the rainwater collection barrels could be havens for mosquitoes if the openings aren't sealed better. Construction has to be sturdy enough to withstand storms and winter weather. With those things in mind, the house that came closest was by Some Assembly Required, as the team dubbed itself. Their hoop house wasn't the least expensive, costing $3.30 per square foot, but the added stability of extra 2x4s and a regular door will help it withstand the winter weather, said Drew Kripe, a member of the team that designed it. "About 5 months ago, I met with a group of about 20 manufacturing engineers, and I presented about industrial drop materials that's going to get thrown away anyway," Brouhard said. "That's what we're really trying to show folks from the neighborhood, is they can take scrap value stuff and they can grow their own food." Brouhard said he also wants to keep the paid apprentices busy year-round. Many of them lack job skills and have felony records, making jobs harder to get. The DIG gardens in empty lots around the city only provide work for them in summer. In this way, not only will Good Samaritan and Northeast Community Fund enjoy fresh produce year-round, but those apprentices will have work all year, too. The next article, Milliken Event Encourages Leadership, written by Valerie Wells, staff writer, from Decatur. Justin Stanford's voice teacher back home in Chicago suggested he should consider a career in opera. "I want to be well-rounded," he said at Millikan University, where he is participating in the Long Vanderberg Leadership Academy. "I'd like to explore R&B and other things, too." Incoming freshmen in the program met for the first time July 15th to learn the history of the two people it's named for and to jump into their first project, which is to research and write a presentation on one of the several isms that include racism, classism, adultism, heterosexism, and more. Students chose their top three from a list and were grouped by similar choices, while Millikan's archivist, Amanda Pippett, helped them think about ways to narrow the broad topic to a specific one. "In social justice issues, you have a lot of leeway in picking something that interests you," she said. "Think about headlines that grabbed your attention. What do you feel the impact is on you, your family, and your friends?" The five-day academy focuses on leadership and social justice, commitment, and academics. The students will live in the same dorm with Long Vanderberg scholars who began in previous years and will work together throughout their years at Millikan, said Ngozi Onyura, assistant professor in the School of Education. Their mentors will come from faculty and the community, as well as their older counterparts. The academy is named for Fred Thomas Long, the first black graduate of Millikan, class of 1918, who went on to be a professional baseball player and coach, and Marion Vanderberg, the first female black graduate of Millikan in 1934. In her class was James Parsons, for whom Parsons School is named. She was a teacher later in life. Scholars chosen for the program receive scholarships, but the real value is in the leadership training, said student Gabrielle Hood, a 2015 graduate of Eisenhower High School. Student mentor Philip Ganley of Decatur wrote in the introductory booklet that the scholarship money was the initial draw for him, but he immediately realized the program had much more to offer. "This is where you will begin to mature," he said. "The college experience will change your perspective on everything." Next, Decatur Township looks for general assistance examples. Written by Ryan Voiles, H&R staff writer. Some Decatur Township officials are looking to other Central Illinois townships for examples of how they administer their general assistance program. A proposed change brought to the Township Board of Trustees earlier this month would adopt a flat grant policy that would set a variety of requirements for people who seek general assistance. Requirements would include a person sending a number of resumes a month or doing community and volunteer service that could lead to education or employment opportunities. A failure to meet the requirements or employment would exclude a person from receiving assistance, which is $100 a month. While the measure failed, as some trustees wanted more time to discuss the change, Township Supervisor Lisa Stanley said she was merely hoping to push general assistance in line with other townships across the state. "This will save taxpayers dollars," she said at the time. "We're merely following the rules that others do as well." While officials from the Township Officials of Illinois said they do not keep track of how townships disperse their general assistance, they said the proposed changes voted down by the Decatur Township are fairly common among townships. One that has been referred to in past meetings of the Board of Trustees is the Capital Township, which operates throughout most of Springfield. The township's general assistance program requires those deemed unemployable to have a doctor's note to verify the condition and to apply for supplemental security income or another form of financial aid before they receive aid from the township. Capital Township is one that Stanley has expressed admiration for several times, especially after its general assistance office implemented its own Workfare program in June. The program help match eligible applicants who must be unemployed, have no children in the home, and are willing to work without any physical limitations with employers who have signed up to offer temporary paid work to Capital Township residents between the ages of 18 and 62. A plan to implement a pilot program for Workfare in the Decatur Township, which had operated one until 2011, failed last fall due to questions of its cost and implementation. A similar program is used by the Bloomington Township, which also requires recipients to attend an orientation and then return an application package to qualify for assistance. General assistance has been a topic of heated discussion for several months, as the township's Board of Trustees has discussed ways to lower the amount of money going toward administration and provide more aid for residents, especially as the amount of money garnered from local property taxes declines. Decatur Township provides transitional assistance to its clients, which includes a medical card and $100 a month. About 250 clients are served a month. And next, KidStock, museum guaranteed to raise a smile. From Decatur, written by Valerie Wells, Jill Davis is a lifelong Beatles fan who took a magical mystery tour in England and visited sites important to Beatles history, including Liverpool and Abbey Road. "I came back and I thought, gosh, I have enough to write something about every letter in the alphabet," Davis said, and she was further inspired by the discovery that her granddaughter didn't know anything about the Beatles. The result was A, B, See the Beatles, an alphabet book with illustrations by Davis's friend Jean Conway. Kids can learn their letters and some tidbits about the greatest band that ever lived, as Davis calls the group, while adults can enjoy the illustrations and the references to Beatles lore, such as K is for Kooky Kaleidoscope Eyes, a reference to the lyrics of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds. The book is available on her website, www.abseethebeatles.com. And she'll also be signing books in front of Giggles during Arts in Central Park in September. Davis gave readings of her book at the Children's Museum of Illinois on Saturday as part of the museum's annual KidStock event, a play on the 1969 Woodstock Rock Festival. Children could make kaleidoscope eyes by decorating paper eye masks, tie-dyed t-shirts, listen to a performance by children's recording artist Little Miss Ann, and put their handprints on a fence destined for the Mercy Gardens at Good Samaritan Inn. All the activities were meant to evoke the spirit of the time in kid-friendly ways. "There's something for every age," said Brenda Crutcher, who brought husband Craig and sons Sean, 9, Trevor, 7, Gabe, 3, and 1-year-old Owen to the event. Little Miss Ann was actually born during Woodstock in 1969, though so far she's been unsuccessful in figuring out which artist was performing at the moment of her birth. She's an instructor at Old Town School of Folk Music in Chicago, the oldest arts organization in the country, she said, and a former Chicago Public Schools teacher. "Usually I have a whole band with me, but traveling, you know," she says with a chuckle, "I only have a drummer with me today." Her performances are interactive and get the kids on their feet to be part of the show, with songs from all four of her CDs included. Ireland Clayman is the museum's tie-dye expert and knows all the tricks. "I asked if I could do this," she said, working on preparing a t-shirt for the process. "My mom and I tie-dye all the time and have for years." Volunteers Anae Hunt and Rachel Wilson presided over the fence panels. It was Hunt's idea to have kids put their handprints and autographs on the white portions, while the natural portions will be eventually home for original artwork. "The fence will be one more way the community has ties to the Mercy Gardens," Hunt said. "I'm going to be a junior at the University of Illinois in the fall," Hunt said. "I decided to come home this summer and do something productive." KidStock is an annual event at the museum, said Jen McMillan, Director of Marketing and Development, and using the theme of Woodstock was a way to give it a colorful flair. And finally, out of Springfield, Mitsubishi factory closure surprises local lawmakers. By Kurt Erickson, Springfield Bureau Chief. Local lawmakers who represent the Mitsubishi car plant in Normal said Friday they had no warning of the factory's demise. "We were all kind of taken aback," said State Senator Bill Brady, Republican of Bloomington, who was informed of the news by a reporter Thursday evening. State Representative Keith Summer, a Morton Republican, said he was traveling when word began spreading of the plant's November closure. "It was a surprise," Summer said. Both lawmakers said they were working with Governor Bruce Rauner's office to help keep the plant operating. "We're all engaged. You hate to see this happen, but you have to be optimistic," Brady said. In a statement, Rauner's top business development official said the administration would work with displaced employees. "I am saddened to see a company as large and pivotal as Mitsubishi close their doors in Illinois," said Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity Director Jim Schultz. "We will be taking the necessary steps on the ground to help with job training and placement for the workers." Although the company has not tied the closure to Illinois' tax structure or labor laws, Schultz voiced the same concerns that Rauner has been discussing since launching his campaign for the state's top post. "We desperately need to improve the business climate here in Illinois. We need to retain companies and jobs, not lose them," said Schultz, an Effingham businessman who is also chairman of Rauner's campaign committee. Under former Governor Pat Quinn, the plant received $29 million over 10 years in tax credits to help Mitsubishi upgrade the facility and preserve 1,200 jobs. A spokeswoman for the Rauner administration said it would be premature to speculate on what amount the company might have to repay if the plant closes. Brady expressed hope the plant could continue operating. "I'm confident that Mitsubishi is committed to making sure that they do everything they can so that the plant does not close. My hope is that whoever ends up operating it uses more of the capacity that Mitsubishi needed," Brady said. "I think it's got one of the best and most affordable workforces in any plant in the country," Brady said. It's not a labor issue. The strength of the plant is its labor force, its location, and what's been invested in the facility. Said Summer, "It's been a fantastic job opportunity economically for Central Illinois. I hope that opportunity continues." U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, whose district skirts the borders of the plant, said he hopes the company reconsiders the extremely disappointing news. "However, my office will do everything we can to assist workers and their families during this transition and help Mitsubishi as they try to find a buyer to retain as many jobs as possible," the Taylorville Republican said. Senator Dick Durbin said his office has been in contact with Normal Mayor Chris Koos and leaders at the plant. "While the plant's potential closure is disappointing news, I am hopeful that this valuable facility and workforce will be able to continue under a new owner." And this has been Wendy Bauer, reading the Decatur Herald and Review on July 27th, 2015. I look forward to reading with you again soon.